I want to welcome Gavin Hood. You're the director and co-screenwriter for Official Secrets, and that's the story of Catherine Gunn, who was a British intelligence analyst who leaked a document that appeared to show the United States and Britain were kind of colluding to try to put some undue pressure on some members of the United Nations to get a sanction for the Iraq War. Is that pretty much what we're talking about here?
I'm so glad you summed it up so well for me, and I didn't have to yet.
Well, okay, the obvious question is, where did you first hear about this? It wasn't one of the bigger news leak items. It didn't get kind of the play that Snowden did and back in the days of Ellsberg. So when did you hear about this, and what made you decide it was something that you wanted to pursue as a project?
It's a great question. If anybody else doesn't know who Catherine Gunn is, that's fine, because my producer called me up one day after we'd made a film called The Eye in the Sky, and he said, "Gavin, have you ever heard of Catherine Gunn?"
Right.
And I paused because you think you should have, when someone says, "Have you ever heard of?"
Absolutely.
The answer was no, and he said, "Just Google her. Google Catherine Gunn and call me back." So that began the journey. I Googled her, found out all sorts of things about her involvement in that early part of the Iraq War. I called him back. I went and spent a week initially with her every day for about 5 days. We were together for about 6 hours a day, just
okay.
taking notes. And from there, I met with Martin Wright, the key journalist in the case, and Ben Emerson, the key lawyer, and others. And then over the course of developing the script, I, you know, sent things back and forth to them. So they were all very involved. All the key players were very involved in helping me put the story together.
Okay, and you also co-wrote the screenplay as well, and I see that at least it's based on the book by Marcia and Thomas Mitchell. So you also spent a lot of time with the principal. So how much of this is the book? How much of this is information you gained by your experiences with the principals?
That's a great question. So the book was a great jumping off point.
Right.
It had come out shortly after Cats and Guns. I shouldn't give away the ending. We won't do that.
Right.
What happens in the film. But information came up when I was interviewing these folks that hadn't come up before. There's scenes towards the end of the film where the lawyer meets with certain people that he had not disclosed he'd met with before, that he felt more comfortable explaining how the whole story had unfolded.
Sure.
How he'd come up with a defense called the defense of necessity, which was a very innovative way of defending Catherine. So I learned a bunch of things that were not in the book. And
right.
It was great to incorporate it.
Yeah, I'm sure that was. And then, of course, you're making a movie, so even though this is based on a true story that you're trying to get out there, you also have the obligations of being a filmmaker, and so there are probably moments where you made composite characters or you know, added some dramatic effect or such. Can you tell me some things in the movie that were placed there for those purposes?
That is a great question, you know, and I honestly want to say to your audience that we did that to very, very little. I'll give you two examples of where we took a little license.
Yeah, please.
The reason it was such an interesting project to work on was precisely because all these key players are very much alive and none of them wanted us to deviate from the material facts of what happened.
Understand.
Now, what do I mean by that? Obviously, the story took place over a period of a year.
Right.
It took a year from the time she leaked the memo until she finally landed up in a courtroom.
Mm-hmm.
We're compressing time into a two-hour movie.
Right.
So, obviously, you're leaving out boring things. So you're deciding what are the key material facts. I said at the beginning of the movie, based on actual events, it's an interesting
okay.
choice. Because the actual events that kind of the film hangs on are all true. I did not composite any characters. There was a move during the early writing process. Some people suggested composite characters. And we just felt it wasn't right because there were three key journalists involved. You could have made them one.
Right.
But Martin went, "Hold on, I didn't discover that. Ed Guglielmi discovered that. I didn't do that. Peter Beaumont suggested that." And he wouldn't have it that they were pushed aside and making him look like them. So it was an interesting challenge from a structural point of view, just as a writer,
right.
to say, I need to stick to all these key events, and can it work dramatically as a film? So that was really the challenge. So I'll give you an example of compressing time.
Yes.
There is a moment in the film where we say 6 months later, and we leave out 6 months of the movie, and it's because just before that title on screen, she is told by a certain inspector,
right.
"You cannot even talk to a lawyer. You, if you want to say anything, you can talk to your superiors at the
right.
intelligence agency, but no lawyers for
And that's in the film.
No, that was terrifying. But that's in the film.
Right.
That's in the film. What's not in the film is that it took 6 months to get that gag order, if you like.
Oh.
It took various court appearances. And so all that happens in our movie is we go, you can't talk to a lawyer. Six months later, she thinks nothing has happened. She gets a phone call from the lawyer. And she says, James, I can't talk to you. And he says, the good news is we've had the gag order lifted.
Right.
The bad news is something else. And we move through those 6 months. And then one other one. There was a moment where the security services and the immigration services arrest her husband.
Right.
And in the real story, he disappeared for 3 days. She couldn't find him for 3 days. And in the film, we compressed that period into 24 hours because we're moving to try and get
sure.
it ended. So I went to Catherine. I said, Catherine, I don't want to drop this part of the story, but I don't have time in this two-hour film to
right.
give it 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Is it okay if the key events, she spoke to her member of parliament, and eventually they got him out, happens a little faster? So I felt a little guilty, but she said, no, I understand. You've got a pacing problem now.
Right.
But other than that, I honestly can tell my audience there are, what happens in the film is what happened in real life. There was just a lot of waiting between in real
sure.
life, between court appearances.
Absolutely. And I imagine that this must have been more difficult than your typical director duties, because here you not only had all of the intricacies of the filmmaking process that you have to deal with on a daily basis, but you also had to compartmentalize certain information. You had the principals who you had a relationship with, so you had to kind of, you know, think about that situation. You had the material that you wanted to get out. You had a message that you're trying to give as well. You have your actors and such. How did you manage that and find a way to put all that in the right boxes to make it so that you could continue?
With a lot of stress. No. No, it was a challenge. You do feel like you're balancing a lot of things. You know, as I say, the structure, the way we figured out how to structure it is,
right.
it became the story of the memo. This secret memo,
right.
the NSA, that landed on Catherine's computer
right.
as a British spy,
mm-hmm.
it's like, okay, so this memo lands, what does she do with it? And then once she leaks it, it goes to a group of journalists.
Right.
And actually, I thought, well, let's just follow the memo. So the second act, in an unconventional way, moves to a whole new group of characters, which
right.
are these journalists. But what's interesting to me is usually these kind of films are told either only from the journalist's point of view
right.
or only from the spy's point of view. And the more I tried to pick one, the more I felt I was cheating out the audience out of what was happening with the other. So I said, screw it. These people are all still alive. Each of their stories is interesting. We'll follow the memo.
Uh-huh.
Memo lands on spy's desk. Spy does something with memo. Memo lands on journalist's desk. Journalist does something with memo. Memo then lands, if you like, on lawyer's desk.
Mm-hmm.
Lawyer decides he will represent the original spy.
Right.
And we come full circle. So in a way, it's the effect that this memo had on Catherine's life and on journalists who didn't know if it was real. They thought it might be a Russian fake.
Right.
So they were quite nervous to publish it. So I thought all of that is interesting. We just got to find a way to get it into one movie. And some will think we succeeded better than others, I'm sure. But what you see is what really happened as that memo moved through the hands of these various people.
Right. And then casting the film, you have some really good names in there. And so when you approach these actors, were you looking for people that were just excellent actors, or are you looking for particular types to fill these, as you said, real living people?
Well, I'll give you a strong example. Because the movie doesn't follow a conventional structure in which the original spy gets to the end and makes some huge speech and saves the
right.
world. I mean, I don't want to give the film away, but that doesn't quite happen. What happens is a very famous lawyer called Ben Emerson helps her at the end, and in a way she has to pass the baton to him.
Exactly.
So in the third act,
mm-hmm.
you need a great actor so that the audience doesn't go, well, why am I switching to a new person? That's when you go, who can play Ben Emerson?
Right.
And I always had in mind Ralph Fiennes, the great British actor.
Yeah, he's wonderful.
Very smart, tremendous presence. Because I thought if I get a weak actor here, I can spoil my whole movie. I
right.
to keep the standards up. Keira Knightley is so good. Well, she's throughout, but
right.
especially in the earlier parts. Then, when she meets Rafe, you don't want someone who's not great taking on her case. So that was the concept. Like, how do we keep the screen presence strong? And we were very fortunate that Rafe eventually was able to do it. He was shooting his own film and editing his own film, and we only could get him for 6 days, four at one point and then two later on.
Yeah.
So everything he does in the movie, we had to shoot pretty fast, but it was worth it to have an actor of his
Doctor Who as well.
Yeah, that's right, of course, Doctor Who. He is just a wonderful guy. Really got that kind of, you know, gritty journalist digging for the truth.
Right.
The meaning of the real Martin Bright, who's become a great friend. Martin is an amazing man of great integrity. So we were very lucky to pull that cast together.
And as a director, I notice you also have quite a bit of acting jobs on your resume as well. So as an actor who's done that much acting, as a director who's done that much acting, do you find that made it easier for you to communicate? Because this is very much on the shoulders of the actors to portray these people in a very personal way, so that you have to feel some kind of connection to Catherine, or else you don't really get it.
Right. No, you're absolutely right, because it is not a film where, as a director, you can do lots of, you know, cool shots and bumps and bangs and action.
Right.
And car chases. They just don't exist.
Exactly.
And for those who want to go and watch a car chase action movie, this may not be the one for them.
Right.
This is all the tension is hanging on the interactions and the manipulation of actors talking to actors, and the language and the way they spin the words and try to pin her in a corner, and then the way she comes back with a better line than the interrogator. It's very manipulative kind of stuff. So you're absolutely right. It all hangs on those close-ups.
It
those
does.
Interactions. And so I needed great actors, and I love actors. I grew up acting. My parents were actors when I was young.
Yeah.
Those performances where you just try and create a space where the actor can be as good as they can be, that's my job. And I'm very proud of the work that Kira does. She's fantastic. And it was fun to work with her. I got to say something funny, if I may. One of the reasons
she
sort of said to me, when I said, "Will you do the movie?" And she said, yeah, I'd love to do it. I don't have to wear a corset. because she's done so many of these period dramas.
Yes.
And so that was kind of her joke about why she really did it. Not for me, she just didn't have to wear a corset. But she does talk about, online you'll find articles, where she's talked about so often as an actress,
mm-hmm.
she has to go back 100 years to play a really strong female character and be in a corset. And it's so ironic, here we are in the modern world.
Right.
She said it's still hard to find really strong female leads. And she said, "I'm really excited about Catherine. She's strong, no corset, pair of jeans and a t-shirt, minimal makeup. I'm in."
Well, yeah, that sounds great.
Joke, but I do think she delivers a very nuanced, well-felt interior performance.
Right, I agree. And then finally...
lovely to work with.
Yeah, and then finally, I guess what I want to ask you is... After the time you spent on this, and between the message and knowing the principles and all the work and study you've put into this particular story, what is the most important thing you hope an audience leaves here with, besides the fact that you hope that you've entertained them as a film? But what do you want the audience to take away from this experience?
That's such a great question. One of the reasons I was drawn to the story of Catherine Gunn was because, and Catherine will not be offended if I say this, because I've said it before, she's like us. So many ways.
Yeah.
She's not some larger-than-life, huge, brilliant person leaking thousands of emails.
Right.
You know, it seems like something out of... You know, Edward Snowden, in some ways, whatever you think of him, is almost larger-than-life. He's so brilliant. You may think he did the wrong thing, but he's not quite ordinary.
No.
Catherine is one of us, and what's interesting is she only leaked this one memo. She was happy in her job. She worked there for 2 years. She
right.
says in the film, "I have no problem gathering intelligence that might help prevent a terror attack.
Right.
What I object to is gathering intelligence that my government is going to use to lie
right.
to British people." So, what I get out of that is we all have jobs. We all work for somebody, almost. Right?
Yeah, obviously.
Working companies, corporations. What would you do if something landed on your desk, and it happens to a lot of people,
sure.
that says your company is doing something fundamentally think is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Cheating the customer, not paying the taxes, defrauding
right.
something, lying about the emissions in the car for Volkswagen or something at Enron.
Right.
When do you have the courage to speak up at the risk of losing your job? And that's not an easy question for many people.
Right.
We have children, we have families. When do you speak up and risk losing your job? So that is what dragged me in. We, I hope, can connect to Catherine. Even though she's a spy, and that's all very cool, and it makes her be cool, and it's, in a weird way, it's about asking ourselves.
Right.
And there's not an easy answer.
No.
No easy, I don't know if I could do what she did. And she risked losing not only her job, but her freedom too.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you agree with her politics or not, that's many people have come to me during the course of this film and seen
right.
that, you know, I either went through something like that at work. One guy spoke to me literally today, saying, I'm going through that right now at work. Thank you for your movie. I mean, it's weird, but it's so I don't know. These are not easy answers, but hopefully, as you said, people watch a good story, they're entertained,
right.
and maybe they're left with something to think about afterwards.
Well, I think that's well said. I think it's well said indeed, and I wish you luck with it. I know you've had some good luck at some festivals, and now it's having some limited run in the theaters, and I hope you continue to have some success with it and get the word out.
Very kind of you, and thank you so much for helping in that process. Really great.
My pleasure, and thank you for taking the time to talk to us here at Upcoming Disc.
You're welcome.